You can't delegate digital transformation for your company. You and your executives have to own it. Executives need to engage, embrace, and adopt new ways of working with the latest in emerging technologies. And that's where we come in. Welcome to Embracing Change. The business world is changing at a faster pace than it ever has, and companies need to keep up. We interview the most interesting CEOs, CMOs, and other executives to talk about their challenges with digital transformation in their industry. This is Embracing Change, and this is your host, Gerardo Carrick.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Embracing Change. My guest today is Matt Sherman. Matt is the Senior Vice President of Brand Marketing and Retail Sales at Pet Plate, a pet food company based out of New York. He has a ton of experience in omnichannel marketing and retail marketing, and we're so pleased to have him on the show today. Hi, Matt. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. Matt, why don't you provide a brief introduction of yourself for our audience so they get to know a little bit more about what they're going to get out of the conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started my career basically in large consumer packaged goods firms like L'Oreal and Coca-Cola. Learned, I think, a lot about marketing from them. You know, they've been doing it for a while and seem to be pretty darn good at it. And my goal there was to really suck up as much as possible. And then in the last, you know, 5-10 years, I have been pivoting to smaller companies. You know, I started with Chobani and then moved on to startups and have been working with companies in the, you know, $10 to $75 million range over the past few years. And I am currently leading brand marketing and retail for a fresh, gently cooked human grade dog food company. They started D2C like so many did. And over the last 2 years have really begun to open up channels that are, you know, third party, whether those are platforms like Amazon or Chewy or independent pet stores and pet specialty.
Wow. I love the journey that you just described, going from large organizations to smaller organizations. What's better about working in smaller organizations in terms of what you do?
Yeah, so I can say for me, certainly, and I imagine your listeners may have a different point of view, but, you know, I really, with large organizations, you know, they have a wealth of resources and knowledge, and you get to see a lot of things, but you get to do, generally speaking, less. And for me, the opportunity of going to a small organization, particularly at a more senior level, was the chance not only to do more, and I have done far more than I bargained for, but also to kind of then have a seat at the table and have conversations. Yeah. And really, I like to say, like, I know and can see who the decision makers are. Even if I'm not the final decision maker in my organization, we've got a great CEO and a founder. You know, I have their ear. I sit on the exec team. I can do that at Coca-Cola, amazing organization, but somebody in Atlanta says no, and you're like, I have no idea who that person is. They're lovely, I'm sure, but you just feel a little bit disconnected because the organization's priorities are so broad and there are enough layers that for me, it just allowed me to have more of an impact on strategy, more of an impact on execution. And, you know, like I said, I've done a lot, everything from, you know, set up the trade show to, you know, pitch investors and sit in board meetings, sit in buyer meetings, be the head of sales, you know, all of the things that I think, you know, you get to fill in whatever gaps are needed. And, you know, that isn't really enjoyable for me. And I like that change. That's why I got into marketing. Like even brand marketing, I love the notion that I'm sitting with ops and then with creative and then with finance and then with, you know, product. So it's been fun for me.
It's a traditional brand marketing role as it was taught years ago by Gillette and Procter & Gamble and Unilever and all of those companies, right? Which is a brand, the brand marketer is the general manager of the brand, right?
And it's exactly.
Basically involved in everything from operations all the way down to sales. So yeah, I totally get it. I can reflect on that, because I've also moved from a larger organization, over 20 years working very large companies, right?
Yeah.
To working on my own business, right? And
yeah.
The challenges that that brings, but also the opportunity of being accountable, being involved in all of the areas of the business. And so I totally get the what you talk about, which is all about the learning and the experience and being able to get involved in all of different areas. That's fantastic. Now, could you share with us a little bit more about your journey in terms of how your experiences have shaped your views on digital transformation and digital opportunities?
Yeah, it has been, I've been doing this long enough now that when I started, there was a group called Digital Marketing, and I used to tease them because I'd walk up to them with my computer and be like, hey, I've got a glitch, can you fix this? And they would look at me with a scowl because they're definitely not IT. And I think that evolution has really been, there used to be a siloed function for digital marketing, and now all marketing is digital. There's even out of home, you go into the New York City subway, whether you're on the platform or you're on the train, that out of home ad is now screen-based. It's digital, sometimes, offered programmatically. So thinking about the idea that there isn't a digital marketing anymore, I think is a much more interesting way to think about it. And, for me, over the course of my career, kind of having to grow and adapt and understand, okay, what are the tactics and what are the channels? How do they compare? What am I going to need to know, particularly in terms of production and content, but also in terms of audience segmentation and, purchasing? Those things have changed pretty dramatically over the last 15, 20 years.
Yeah. And you could almost argue, right, that the all marketing now is digital marketing.
Yeah.
Right? You cannot separate marketing from digital marketing anymore.
No, I mean, we're on a podcast right now that is not over terrestrial radio. It is, so even almost every aspect, every channel that you think about in terms of communicating with your consumers outside maybe direct mail and some limited out of home is pretty much digitally enabled. And so I think about it all as like, okay, this is the method that we're communicating with our consumers. What is it offering us in terms of, what we can do with the message, where we can find them and meet them? What can we communicate in those situations?
Absolutely. So I'd like to talk about digital transformation in challenger brands.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I know Petplate being being a smaller brand, it's a challenger brand, and it started its way as you said, instead of going through retail, you started digitally and then moved to retail, right? So I'd love to get your take on that. How do you see digital strategies playing a role in the rise of challenger brands?
So I'll break this into two buckets, right? I think for a D2C business, especially a D2C business nowadays, there is a performance bucket that will put all of our marketing strategies in. And then I think there's also kind of a brand bucket that will put all of our marketing strategies in. And so we don't necessarily like at Petplate to differentiate too much between brand and performance. We work really closely together. It's one of the reasons I joined is because our performance team and our brand team are attached to the hip. We run it as a single marketing team. And the idea that, it's the idea that like going and doing sales is somehow separate from marketing, that you're not going to have the same thing. But the mandates for digital marketing in a performance-driven business in terms of conversion and what types of content and how you're thinking about that content and what types of messages that you're communicating, how benefit-oriented is it, how price-oriented is it, to allow you to get that click, whether it's on Meta or TikTok or anywhere else, and how you're tracking CAC is a different ballgame, I think, than some of the other channels that all bucket as brand. So, and has different challenges. So whereas in In performance, it is efficiency. And your goal is to be as efficient as possible with all of your spend and creative. In brand, for challenger brands, it's really about how big of a voice can you have given the fact that nobody knows who you are, and what are you going to be able to do to sort of punch through given that you don't have the resources for a Super Bowl ad. And for about a Super Bowl ad, you don't have the I don't have the resources to run, you know, national advertising that's not pure performance based. I'm not doing spectaculars in Times Square. I am not doing giant events and, you know, at LA Live. There's, you know, I'm not paying celebrity X to wander around with my cup of dog food. All of those things require you to really think and iterate on the creative side. What is it that you want to say? What is it that you want to stand for? How are you engaging your specific consumer? And, you know, building a brand that has a clear target that is really affectionate to your brand. You know, and there's some smaller brands that have done really great work out there and, you know, want to shout really loud. Liquid Death has done amazing work. They shout really loud. And, you know, that is become who their brand is. That doesn't work for every brand, though. Pet Plate is not Liquid Death. I do not have, you know, Bert Kreischer in his underwear dancing around, right? You know, I'm not sampling, you know, my water with my dog food with pureed caviar or whatever the next viral video is. You know, but that as an example to me, I think is a really good one about how a brand in a category that is, you know, I work for Smartwater. You're selling water. The stuff runs freely from the tap. You've got to be really good at figuring out what your point of view is and how to differentiate. And I think that goes
it's all emotional, right?
Exactly.
It's all, I mean, you have functional and emotional benefits, right? And in the case of that Smart Water, right? You know, of course they try to push that there's an emotional that there's a functional benefit of drinking
it,
but it's all emotional. It's all about how it makes you look, how it makes you feel.
Yeah, I like to say of my consumers, 99.9% of them didn't look like Jennifer Aniston. But there was a piece of that that was like, oh, that's in reach. I could do that. She drinks it. It just made me feel a little bit better about my choice. I felt a little healthier. I felt a little bit more glamorous. It looked good in my hand. All of those things are incredibly important. And then, you know, people then ascribe very functional benefits to those things. Where they're like, oh, it was like Gatorade. I just, you know, and you're like, no, you know, I wish I could tell you that. Wish I could tell you that it really like has major functional benefits, but it's very good water. I still drink it, but it's not, you know, it's not Pedialyte.
I get you. I mean, I can throw in an example from I spent 8 years working in the drinks industry, right? Mm-hmm. A fair amount of those working in the whiskey industry.
Yeah.
I actually lived in London for 8 years and I was brand manager or marketing manager of a very large whiskey brand globally.
Yeah.
And one of the things that happens with whiskey is that you have super premium, standard, and then basic brands, right? So so you go from a $20 whiskey to a $45 whiskey to an $80 whiskey to a $300 whiskey, right? And in many cases, you have brands that they have their versions in each of those segments, right? And then you have the competitors in each of those. What is interesting is that if you do a blind taste with most consumers, and you give them a $300 whiskey, an $80 whiskey, a $50, and a $20, it's very hard for them to identify which one is each. In fact, the majority of people, and we did this time and time again, we would give them a rum, a tequila, a whiskey, a vodka, five different, not brands, types of spirit, and people would not recognize more than two.
Right? Oh, wow.
What this means is that most people, you know, they're drinking and they say they like a brand, but you know they really like the brand for the how they make how it makes them feel, how it makes them look. About themselves, not that much about the functional benefit. Of course, there's going to be people that are experts, you know, like a whiskey connoisseur, right? They would know, but that would be 10% of the drinkers. The majority won't. So what I learned from that is the importance of establishing a brand, story, and establishing those emotional benefits.
Yeah.
And making sure that those benefits were super relevant and super spot on with what my audience or with my customers wanted to feel. Because that's really, and then as you said, then they create a functional benefits for it. Then you give them the arguments for that, right? So, I like this whiskey so-and-so because it is from the highlands and the lowlands and it has these stones. And, you know, now you give them all of that support, but in reality, the majority of people cannot recognize that.
It makes us feel better about our choices because it's ground. Like, we like the idea that we make rational choices grounded in fact, but the reality is, you know, I did a much shorter stint in spirits. God bless you, my liver only made it about 6 months. You know, it was in vodka. And when I got there and realized, oh, neutral grain spirits is the definition of vodka, an odorless, flavorless, tasteless liquid.
It doesn't taste like anything.
It doesn't taste like anything. And then people will, you know, go to the ends of the earth to swear that Grey Goose is better than Ciroc, is better than Kettle One. And I was like, first of all, one, I'm not sure that I believe you, but two, when was the last time you drank it straight? Because as soon as you put some cranberry in it, trust me, it all tastes the same.
Like, it all tastes like cranberry. Yeah, absolutely.
Cranberry. And so, yeah, that was a huge insight to me. And also, what I found really interesting about this business was the importance of the bar call and how clearly that stated, you know, as a badge, what you identified with and your emotional benefits. So whether you're a Jack and Coke person or whether you're a Kettle Martini person or
what it says about you is what it says about you.
Exactly. Which is, and if you, to me, it was a great idea of like, okay, these are your customers. These are the people for whom I am there that are aspiring to be, you know, something very specific. Like I always like to think that, you know, you have to be something to somebody or you'll be nothing to everybody. And so if I can identify sort of those characteristics, not demographics, but just sort of those, you know, basic archetypes of who I want to be to represent, and then I can begin to formulate, all right, what's important to that person and why, and how do I show up in a way that makes me feel like, you know, a man's man or a girly girl or whatever in between, is super interesting. It's been interesting trying to apply that to pet, I have to say.
Of course, of course. So going back to pet, right? And we talked about you hinted in your introduction of the fact that you started as a digital brand and then started getting into more of a retail mode, right? Can you tell us a little bit more about that and the challenges behind that?
Yeah. So there's some real advantages. First off, which is that unlike having worked for smaller brands, you know, where you are dependent, say, on regional retailers and growing distribution and ACV, and as a result, the type of marketing that you do is much more localized and much more focused. When you're starting as a brand with a national D2C footprint, I'm covering all 50 states already. And so I'm looking at awareness and how I build awareness in a much broader way, because it doesn't matter where you are. Unless you're in Alaska or Hawaii, you can order pet plate. So it doesn't matter that my biggest concentration of stores is, you know, in Minnesota or in the Ohio Valley or in the Northeast, because I can go on and tell the story. And it also, you know, for retailers, traditional brick and mortar retailers, you bring a skill set and can offer them a skill set that they're still just not that great at, which is digital marketing and understanding how to reach their consumers through, you know, paid digital marketing. And, you know, they've got a great Facebook page and they do some email, but it's not their bread and butter. And you're coming in and saying, hey, look, in order to invest in this account, we'll use our skills and resources to help you here and help us and drive people to store, because we know how to, you know, geo-target, and we know how which of our emails and what we have to say in them does really well. We know how to communicate our brand in a digital format. On the other hand, it is a real challenge from just an operational perspective. And thinking about it as a very different business. You know, when I got into this and we were looking at retail versus D2C, I would, you know, it's a different, you know, people think of it as like, oh, I'm just selling this. I'm one business selling the same product in multiple different places. And I was like, actually, I think the way to look at this is you are multiple businesses all selling the same product. Because what you need to do to execute a D2C business from your distribution centers to your fulfillment centers and your relationships with UPS or FedEx or whatever last mile carrier that you have and how you pack out your boxes to make it most efficient in your fulfillment centers has nothing to do with what your distributors and retailers actually want or need, you know? And so you are building, you're really thinking about it like from a product standpoint all the way to a, you know, functional standpoint. I need salespeople. I need a distributor. I need to get along with my distributor reps. I need distribution. You know, all of those things are not necessarily complementary to what you're doing on the D2C side because they're totally different partners. They're staffed differently. They're when you think about them in your plant is different, and what your retail, what the end user needs, that retailer is also different because they might want a six pack and a sleeve that's shelf ready and that they can tear and stick in a freezer. And I'm selling, you know, 14 pounds of, you know, gently cooked, delicious pet food on subscription. That's not in a six pack because doing a six pack would make no sense for me if I wasn't doing retail. So that for me has been kind of the biggest challenge in just thinking about it and how you market it. And then how you translate some of those digital skills to consumer education in store, and you know what that means for everything from point of sale to how do you take advantage of some of your retailer's own marketing tools, whether those that is an a live training system that they have. You know, there's any number of SaaS programs that these guys are using, especially the small independent pet stores, around loyalty programs. So we partner with Astro Loyalty, that is that specifically works with the independent pet channel. We work with Retail.Pet, which is an essentially an e-learning suite for the associates to learn more about your brands, where if they watch videos, they get prizes, basically. It's, you know, it incentivizes them to be able to deliver a more assisted sell. All of those, you know, again, digital aspects come into play in a way that they just simply don't on the D2C side. And it is not, you know, people think that, oh, I'm just scaling this one business by selling it in this new channel. And I'm like, actually, no, you're just setting up parallel businesses that happen to share a manufacturing facility. Almost everything else is different. Even your P&L looks different. Like the way that you think about logistics, the way that you think about, there's no bill backs or charge backs from your distributor in your D2C business. You're not sort of trying to figure out, you know, what a multi-tier pricing model is. Like it's all of those things have been new. And I think, you know, interesting to me to help figure out, but also to communicate to the existing organization, to figure out how to build, to figure out what tools to use, you know, both to communicate with the consumer and even just to deliver the product.
Yeah. I think one of the things that you just mentioned that got my attention is the fact that it's a very fragmented retail channel, right? If you were dealing with one or two chains, then you can actually achieve scale and you can achieve equalization in a lot of the things that you do, right? But in a fragmented marketplace, when you're going to independents, then it's very interesting what you talk about in terms of the challenge of being able to help them promote the brand, help them, you know, have some consistency on how it's being presented, how it's being offered, etc. Right? So very, very, very interesting. I like to jump to the topic of COVID-19 and the surge in pet adoption. And the surge in specialty pet food demand, right? How has your company leverage digital platforms to ride this wave?
Yeah. So first of all, we've benefited just generally from a cultural shift, from two kind of cultural shifts. One during COVID-19, one was a much higher adoption of, you know, not just dogs, but like, you know, getting stuff online. E-commerce mm-hmm. in general swelled. And then two is this humanization of pets trend, where, you know, I like to joke that if Charles Schulz was alive today, Snoopy wouldn't have a doghouse because he'd be sleeping in Charlie's bed. You know, there's it's a different way of thinking about your pet. And, you know, that for us in terms of the food that we provide or what we do has been really helpful. And communicating that, you know, what's really interesting to me about this shift is all of a sudden people are looking for more. And in the sort of in the middle of COVID-19, one of the main channels that people were using got flipped on its head. iOS 14, you know, that shift happened pretty much mid-late COVID in 2021, I guess. So about halfway through, this acquisition channel that everybody had relied on for very specific targeting to help them take advantage of the fact that people were home and you knew exactly what they did and you were sending them, this very targeted ad, all of a sudden it was like, no, now you got to figure out how to either get better at this or diversify your channels. And so for us, that has been the real question, I would say, over the last, you know, year and a half to 2 years, is how are we taking what we know and have learned, on Meta, for example, and improving it so that we can continue to work well in a post iOS 14 environment. I think we're at iOS like 16 now. So, how do you even begin to think about channels like TikTok, like Pinterest? How do you think about your affiliates in a different way? I think affiliate marketing and, you know, platforms like ShareASale have become a much more important part of what we're doing. And same thing with search. And how are we getting better at search so that instead of relying, you know, quite heavily on one, you know, channel, we're looking at, okay, between Meta, search, affiliate, TikTok, and, you know, direct mail. We have a more complete suite of tools, most of which are still digital, but that we are using to acquire customers. And so, you know, it's been a weird shift because you have these two kind of three pretty big cultural shifts: the dog adoption, the personalization of the pet, and the increase in e-commerce came around the same time as, you know, people as the shift in how you are acquiring customers online.
It's vital, right, to have that diversification of channels and have them to work together, right? I keep, you know, when we talk to clients, we talk a lot about each tool and each of these channels has like different, very, very different functionalities, right? So when you talk about search and somebody's actually intentionally looking for something, right? They're already telling mm-hmm. you from their search, what is it that they're looking for? So you can be so specific on your brand message, right? And which funnel you're trying to drive them to. Right.
Yeah.
While you're in Meta, for example, it's totally different. Right. In Meta, it's almost like a brand building, more brand awareness, or fantastic for remarketing, retargeting as well. Right. Somebody mm-hmm. that searched on something, you can retarget them on Meta with something way more specific. Right. But how all of those channels work together really is basically the secret sauce, right? In terms of how you can optimize a lot of these efficiencies. One of the trends that started with the with COVID was subscription boxes, right? How's that change in the landscape contributed to to the rising of subscription boxes. Is this something that you guys are doing or intending to do? What do you think about that?
You know, we actually are an all subscription business almost online.
Okay.
We have a very small, what we'd consider our e-commerce or quick checkout business, which is just in our treats and supplements. You know, it's interesting and I feel like a blessing to be in pet food, because as you as a dog owner know, your dog eats twice a day, every day, and eats what you serve him. Unless they're really picky and you have to go and look to find that food that you that works for their dog, or they have a stomach issue and you find that food that works for your dog. And then once you find that food, you don't change. They eat the same morning and night. And so in that sense, it's kind of a perfect subscription business. Whereas, you know, whether it is, you know, outside of maybe contact lenses, you know, where certainly compared to a human food or even shampoo and conditioner or razors, where I don't feel like eating that tonight. I don't feel like cooking, even though you've done half the prep for me. I don't want to shave today because it's the weekend. And I feel like this is more shampoo than I need. You know, all of those things, I think everyone's like, oh, this will be so easy. People can just get it on demand. There's relatively few categories, I think, that lend themselves as well to subscription as pet food. And even then, you know, we had like, look, I wish I could tell you that we kept every customer that we acquired, but we have, you know, the way that it changes the economics in terms of what we think about when we think about our CAC and long-term value and where we, you know, what we clear when, you know, when we break even essentially has shifted, because you're thinking about this not as I went on to Amazon and I bought a, you know, rest for my wrists in front of this keyboard, which I'm literally shopping for later. You know, or it, because that's a one-off purchase, even jewelry or, you know, glasses or those things. So this is a, once I get you in, if I like you, my job is to keep you. And if we can get you to like the third box, we pretty much have you, because your dog is now eating it. They're used to it. You're happy with it. You're not interested in rocking that boat. And so it's a very different business. And we think about some of those transitions between first purchase, second purchase, third purchase differently, particularly when it comes to our long-term value, you know, plays and how we think about retention marketing, because it's not, well, you come back to my site and buy another shirt from the Gap or wherever. It is, I want you to stay and keep subscribing to this box. And, you know, if you're going to go away for the summer, you know, if you're not here next week because it's 4th of July week, or you're away for 2 weeks in August, how do I make it as easy as possible for you to change your address, to pause, to make sure that to get your subscription to come a week early or a week late? All of those things, you know, and our CS team deserves a ton of credit because they're incredibly agile. But those are the sorts of things that you focus on a subscription business like this, because it's not just like, hey, I didn't like, you know, this toy that I ordered for my dog. It's like, this is food. The dog has to eat it. I'm going to be in, you know,
and it's perishable.
North Carolina, and it's perishable.
And it's perishable. Yeah. So, so it's not like, okay, just send it and I'll pick it up. I'll pick it up when I arrive. It has to be on the fridge and it has to be eaten in a certain amount of time. Right. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's very, very, and I can see how that then defines the way you operate and the way you then offer a customer experience, right? And all the functionality that you need to be able to deliver that, which is very different to other categories and types of products. So we're about to wrap up, right? But before we wrap up, I would love to get your take on future digital marketing predictions, right? So basically, what shift do you foresee in the industry in the next 2 or 3 years? How do you think technology will shape these trends?
So first of all, I think, you know, we hit on one aspect, which is diversification. And I think companies are particularly, you know, e-commerce driven companies are still working to figure out how to balance Meta, with everything else in this mm-hmm. new world, particularly people who are looking for a younger audience. And you know, honestly, I don't know a lot of people my age, and I am no spring chicken, who are on Facebook. Most of them are on Instagram, but certainly, you know, my daughter is a teenager. She's like, Facebook, Schmacebook. I don't have Instagram. I'm on Snapchat, YouTube, and TikTok. Everything yes. else is worthless to me. You know, how do you make those into acquisition channels? What are the tools you need? How do you learn to develop those? I think it's a really big question for just pure digital marketing, you know, because each of them have idiosyncrasies. You know, what you make for Instagram probably doesn't work on TikTok. Most people think that what you make on TikTok works on other channels. I'm skeptical a little bit that that's true. Everyone's like, oh, if you put it on TikTok,
elements
it works everywhere. Elements do.
Of it, yeah.
You know, so how are you figuring out how to make content and adequate information for those channels? And then two is, you know, I think, are on the downslope of the D2C obsession because the reality is that, you know, for a lot of companies, the unit economics just don't work all that well. And the idea that you only sell one thing in one place, well, it seemed really interesting when nobody left their houses, is not actually how people shop, you know, and even how people shop changes, you know, whether when you, in the physical world, when you go to CVS to buy a bottle of shampoo, you have a very different intention than when you go to Costco and pick up shampoo. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for 5.1 ounces at CVS. I'm looking for 5.1 liters at Costco, and my mentality shifts in terms of what I'm thinking about. And so I think this is going to become a broader part of the overall sales mix. And so thinking mm-hmm. about how do you take, again, some of those learnings from, you know, understanding and targeting your consumer and in a world where you expect them to learn about and purchase all through a screen, to where you're learning about and purchasing, learning about through a screen or some sort of a screen, and then purchasing elsewhere. How do you think about that as a business, as your sales channels diversify, not just as your kind of performance marketing channels diversify? Go ahead.
It's all about the customer journey, right? It's all about understanding what that new journey is, because that journey dips into online and then goes back into the physical and then goes back into online and then into the physical. You know,
exactly.
you might be on Target, right? In Target, and you might be wanting to buy a digital TV subscription, right? You might be between Amazon Fire Stick and Roku, right?
Yeah.
So you're at the retail, but you might be reading reviews on CNET on your phone. To make that decision, right? So understanding that journey and being able to then make sure that you're understanding what is the customer behavior and what type of questions they're asking, so they can make that decision, whatever that decision is, right? Is it they're going to buy it online or they're going to buy it in retail? I think that has changed. I think that is the thing that we can take away from what has happened in the last 3 years, which is people will use digital way more now to make those decisions, regardless of where they end up doing the last purchase, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the interesting things about GA4, which we will not talk in detail right now.
Yeah.
But I think one of the interesting things about the sunset of Google Analytics and moving to GA4 is the fact that it's going to provide a much better attribution, right? Because with Google Analytics, you have a last point of touch attribution, last purchase attribution, right? So the last point of touch is what's attributed as the conversion channel, when in reality, there might have been 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 points of touch before that that had contributed to that final purchase, whatever that purchase happens, right? So
I think that that's going to be so helpful, you know, just because to your point about Target, like not only are people going in and learning about it, but they might decide, hey, I'm going to go in and I'm going to price comp it. And instead of buying it at Target, I'm going to buy it on Amazon from my phone. Does that mean as a manufacturer and as a brand that I shouldn't be in Target? Does that mean as Target, I shouldn't carry this brand because they're coming in and price comping it? Like all of those questions, you know, the closer that we get to, you know, a new system of analytics and figuring out how people are actually buying and what that consumer journey is, the more interesting those questions become.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Matt, thank you so much for your time and for your insights. This was a very enjoyable conversation. I had a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed it as well.
I did. Absolutely. Thank you for listening to me ramble on, and I really appreciate it. It's always a pleasure to chat.
Excellent. And thanks everyone for listening to this podcast, and looking forward to seeing you on the next one. Goodbye.